comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. I've gotten, over the past two or three months, people writing various emails about wanting to know if we have the shows that we did with Command Sergeant Major James Norton archived. And the answer to that is yes. All of our shows are archived. They are in our members' community. But in addition to that, we did three shows with Command Sergeant Major James Norton, and we did one show about him and his mysterious death. So we have the whole collection in our video galaxy. So all four of those shows are in the video galaxy in our members community, and you can just log in, click on video galaxy, you'll see them listed there. So all of the shows we did with him and the show we did about him, about his mysterious death, they're all right there. You can watch them. And, of course, if you prefer, they are also in our archives, which we don't call archives. We call them K-Pods because they are podcasts. And here at the Kevin Smith Show, everything starts with a K, including our newsletter, the K-Files. Our K-Files is absolutely free and absolutely stunning. It's a great publication. It's you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. No strings attached. And there's no genius in not getting it because, you know, it's free. So why wouldn't you want it? It's a great publication. We've been publishing that for 12 years. And each and every week we send out a new edition. If you're not subscribed, be sure you do subscribe. You just go to my website and you'll see in great big letters there in the middle of your screen, K-Files. That is our newsletter. Click that, subscribe. You'll get an email with a link in it that you have to click to activate that subscription. Activate it and you're good to go. And we normally send that out on Friday nights. We start sending it out Friday nights after the show. So you've got time to get in on this week's K-Files. Just get over to KevinSmithShow.com, click the link, and subscribe, all right? Now, the members community is not free, but it's pretty darn close to it. It's $7.50 a month. That's 25 cents a day. Now, come on. You paid more than that for your school lunch in the second grade. 25 cents a day. And for that, you get our archives, the K-Pods. You get the video galaxy. You get your own blog. You get your own friends page. You get your own photo album, your own video album, forums, chat, a library of ebooks to download, and lots, lots more. You're missing it out. You're missing out on it. And nobody but you can fix it. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and this is the Kevin Smith. My guest tonight is John Kettler. John is someone that a number of you have written to me and requested that we get John on the show. And through a little help of our good friend Robert Stanley, I was able to get in touch with John Kettler. He is with us tonight. John is formerly a military analyst at Hughes Aerospace, dealing with everything from commando attacks to orbital satellite systems and directed energy weapons. After his career there, he has done a number of things. He's the primary, provided the primary research for the Oscar-winning documentary called The Panama Deception. He's a published author with over 50 magazine articles on cutting-edge topics and was interviewed for the documentary called None Dare Call It Murder, dealing with the Vince Foster death. He's the author of a couple of books, UFOs, Anti-Gravity, Vimanas and Mystics, India's Black Projects, and New Warfare Strategy. That's one of them. The second one is Extreme UFO Crash Recovery. Did the U.S. recover a dinosaur-era UFO? And we'll be talking about specifically that one tonight and a few more things. At this time, let me say, John Kettler, it is a delight to have you with us, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. Good evening, and hello, world. I am just blown away by the thought of speaking to such an incredible audience. I'm amazed I can even talk, actually. But fortunately, I seem to be able to.
Well, you've got quite a background, John. What does specifically a military analyst do in a non-government organization, a private company? What is it that a military analyst is doing there?
Okay, well, let me back up a little bit and clarify something. I actually worked for what was then Hughes Aircraft Company Missile Systems Group at Canoga Park, California, and later at Rockwell International North American Aerospace Operations.
Okay.
Headquartered out of El Segundo. I used military analyst because people can get their heads around it. Actually, what my job was, I was technically a Soviet and Warsaw Pact threat analyst. My job was to look at anything and everything to do with those militaries, how they thought, what their doctrine was, what their strategy was, what their capabilities were, what their deficiencies were, and anything and everything along those lines. If it flew, crawled, ran on the surface of the ocean or submerged, it was in my bailiwick. And what I was specifically looking to do was make sure that we did not undergo technological surprise. These were top defense contractors. Hughes is now part of Raytheon, Missile Systems Group is, and Rockwell was bought up by Boeing. I worked on programs like the TOW anti-tank missile, the Roland surface-to-air missile, the Maverick anti-tank missile, and also close air support weapon, Assault Breaker, which was a deep strike system, one people probably here know of, the AC-130U Spooky at Rockwell. I worked on the National Aerospace Plane. That was the last program I worked on, specifically the military versions in what was called a special access program, but not black, more gray, in that it was acknowledged. The black programs are called USAPs for unacknowledged special access programs. So
okay, hang on a second. Let's talk about space plane that you're talking about. That's not the shuttle, is it?
No. This was the hydrogen-powered single-stage-to-orbit craft built largely out of titanium. It was essentially a large fuel tank. Our version was essentially a variation of a cone with very small and long tapering delta wings on it and a vertical stabilizer. It was powered by a scramjet, which is engineer speak for supersonic combustion ramjet. The craft took off, flew to a certain speed, and then transitioned to this ramjet where they were injecting fuel directly into the intakes, and the thing was flying on lift until it obtained, on body lift primarily, until it attained orbital velocity and was able to go into orbit. What we were working on were what were called the NDVs, or NASP-derived vehicles. This was an entire family of craft ranging from something in, say, roughly the performance range of the SR-71 all the way up through orbital vehicles. Multiple vehicles, in other words. And all of the military applications of NASP, beyond bare mention of basic possibilities, fell under the rubric of this special access program. And I had all the, what we call the tickets for that program, all the way up through what was called level 4. And this was to be the crown jewel of the nation and certainly of the company, but it didn't turn out that way. And what was then McDonnell Douglas, through reasons I still don't know to this day, wound up winning it, and McDonnell Douglas no longer exists. It was bought up as well. So such was the upheaval in the defense industry after the fall of the Berlin Wall.
How did somebody like you come to be interested in UFOs?
My interest goes all the way back to early childhood, I would say elementary school, when I encountered on the bookmobile such books as Frank Edwards' Flying Saucers, Serious Business, which I think was published around 1957. I encountered it in the early 60s. I got very heavily into flying saucers for a time. I was even subscribed to the Project Blue Book reports, but I should tell your viewers and your audience that the good cases, the ones that were really worthwhile, as opposed to the kinds of things that were dismissed as marsh gas and Venus and whatnot, never got into those reports. Those were taken out and published in a separate classified volume called Project Blue Book Report Number 13.
Okay, now, in your position, mm-hmm. as you've described, you had all the tickets, all the security clearances necessary for the entire program, that this space plane program that you were talking about, and the multitude of other vehicles in that family.
Mm-hmm.
In your position as a military analyst in that program, have you had access to UFO information that's been kept from the public?
I have, but not so much by virtue of that program, but just by virtue of having access to intelligence collections that were specifically set up to support defense contractors in California.
What sort of UFO information did you bump into that perhaps we would not have heard?
Well, it depends on what books you've read. If you've read some of Timothy Good's, you can actually see examples of it. But the intelligence summaries that were put out, I can't remember whether it was daily or weekly, he publishes examples of those. And if, you know, somebody tells you the government isn't keeping track of UFO incidents, the person is either ignorant or lying. Your pick, depending upon the person, the situation, and things like that. But I can tell you, having seen with my own eyes the intelligence summaries, which were very much like the ones that Timothy Good published extracts of, what he's got there is legitimate. I saw the exact same sort of thing myself. And they were reporting UFO cases from all over the world, and the classification markings of the document were secret, no foreign, which is no foreign, when intel, warning intelligence sources and methods involved. And this was a set of printouts that was on a large, I don't know what to call it, kind of a U-looped clipboard, so they could accommodate many of them. And you could quite clearly tell that the government was interested in this. The incidents were systematically and concisely reported, and you can see, as I say, an example in one of Timothy Good's books. I can't remember whether it's Above Top Secret or the next one he did, but it's there.
Did you ever run into any of that information that made it sort of took your breath away and made you sit back and say, wow?
The closest I came to it while I was in military aerospace was we had someone who had what we called a sponsor back in the CIA, in the scientific and technical side of the operation. And the closest I got to it was being told about so-called space junk, which was not of terrestrial origin. And I was told it was very, very old, and that was about all I was told. I never had any direct encounter with UFO information in the course of my job. That was kind of an incidental thing. And I saw what I saw at the intelligence vault simply in the course of reading the intelligence summary of intelligence-related events all over the world.
So this space junk, you were told about space junk that is not of terrestrial origin. Were you told any description of this space junk?
Really. The individual could be remarkably tight-lipped when the occasion suited. And I got the impression that this person had not been told very much by the sponsoring organization.
Okay, now you've written this book entitled Extreme UFO Crash Recovery. And then it asks a question, did the U.S. recover a dinosaur-era UFO? What's this about?
Well, I don't remember how I got onto it originally, but somehow I became aware of a story on the Project Serpo site. And the Serpo site deals with the real-life basis for the last part of Close Encounters of a Third Kind, where the protagonist, Richard Dreyfuss, after going through all kinds of trials and tribulations, gets to the base of, what do they call it, the Devil's Tower, I believe is the name of it, in, I don't remember the state right now, but it's where the landing and meeting with the ETs takes place. And somehow he winds up, it's been a long time since I saw the movie, so forgive me for lacking on the details, but he winds up being chosen. They give him a crash medical checkout. Next thing you know, he's in an orange jumpsuit and walking up the ramp of the ET mothership after the ETs have come out, and you see them leading the humans aboard, and they're off on this trip to the ET homeworld. Well, that really happened. And the Serpo site is built around that and things related to it and descriptions of the technology and whatnot. And I happened to encounter a story that talked about this crash recovery. So I happen to have some truly excellent and very sensitive contacts who have information that even the President of the United States can't even begin to come close to. As an aside, it takes a presidential clearance to get into Area 51, but the President himself cannot go. He lacks the need to know. So what I started doing was asking some questions, and initially the contact that I was talking to was not terribly forthcoming. So what I've learned to do in my years doing intelligence type stuff is that there are ways of feeling your way into things, and that there are ways of asking questions in such a way that you can gain information even without a direct answer being provided. So we started playing an extended version of that, where we looked at the reported key aspects of the story, and it said that it was, you know, a strong NATO ally, and that it was recovered in the south of the country, and various things. So we started looking for places that fit the criteria, and so the first part of the book is an investigation as it unfolded of looking at a bunch of different countries and comparing the specific information. You know, it talked about, you know, you've got to have fossil beds for dinosaurs. It's got to be the southern part of the country. It's got to be a staunch NATO ally. So then you have to run through the entire list of the member countries in the time frame given. You have to check the time frame against who was an ally at the time. You know, some started and didn't stay in. France being a stellar example. France changed its position via NATO. Okay, so you have these elements that have to be tested. And then while I was working on that, you know, I took it as far as I could. The next development is somebody's trying to kill my contact. The contact is now running scared, and so information starts to flow at a much greater rate and without a lot of the filtering on it. So I start piecing more and more parts of the puzzle together. Then things start coming into focus, other bits and pieces come my way, and I take the story as far as I can. There are successive breaking developments, which are detailed in there, which is why the book has multiple epilogues, which is highly unusual. And even after I had, quote-unquote, put the book to bed, other things happened, and so this book actually continues over onto my website, where part of what happened that wraps up the story was detailed in one of the posts that I made. And those are the sorts of posts that induce acute gastric distress in the people with the what I call the nosebleed clearances.
Okay, we have to step away for a break, and we will return right after this.
Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, John Kettler. John, as we went away for break, you were just about to tell us something that gives extreme gastric distress to people who have nosebleed clearances. I assume you mean people with very high clearances.
Yes. Well, the opening argument for high clearances is what they call top secret sensitive compartmented information, but these are way beyond those, and they come with color codes. And you know, people have probably heard, at least some of your listeners have by now, of MJ-12, you get into things like that. You get into all kinds of interesting, what they call pro words, which are prefatory words in front of the words. You get in, you know, compartment is a specific region of information that you are allowed access to. So, for example, you might have top secret SITK back when. That was special intelligence, and T was talent, which was overhead imagery that was atmospheric, like the U-2 and the SR-71 and such, and K was keyhole, which was reconnaissance satellites, like the KH, well, the Big Bird. I won't try to do the KH numbers because I'll probably get them wrong because I haven't had to think about it.
Okay, well, let me ask a couple of questions here based on the information that you have mentioned. You mentioned that you were reading stuff at the Project Serpo site, and that sort of led you to some other information. And I want to say for our listeners, because I know many of you, back when Project Serpo website first came out, was really, really hot, you researched this, and you're aware of the fact, I'm sure, and I know our listeners are, that a lot of that information has been discredited. However, folks, I want to remind you, we had a top, a really, really top scientist on this show who I asked about that, and he said, well, it wasn't, there was a real program, and the basic information about an exchange program happening, that's real. It was not called actually SERPO. Its official name was something else, which he wouldn't tell us. And he said the Project Serpo site has some of the details wrong. Mm-hmm. But the basic information about an exchange program where we had people from Earth who went to an alien planet, and we had at least one extraterrestrial here in exchange, this, he said, that actually happened. Now, I have no way to verify that, folks. I mean, you gotta understand, there are people who have information, then there's people like me who ask questions about information. So, there's no way I can verify that, but that is a really top scientist in this country who made that statement on this show. But now, you've also mentioned just now MJ-12. It is highly controversial. There are a lot of people who say it never existed. I've read recently the argument that, well, if it existed, it didn't deal with the extraterrestrial stuff. What do you know about MJ-12?
I've got the current membership list.
So it does exist.
Quite real. Some time ago, there was an Italian who outed the entire membership. There's probably a video floating around on YouTube. I can't remember the Italian's name. But I trust my contacts. It is very real. It has been very dangerous. It has also been the subject of targeting by the liberation forces.
All right, now you said earlier that you told us about one of your contacts that was trying to give you some information, and then there was an attempt made on this contact's life, and he was on the run, basically. Have there been attempts against your life?
If there have, somebody else handled them. There have been threats against my life. Several. There have been threats against others in my circle, but nobody has, you know, screwed a gun in my ear or tried to run me off the road. I've had no visits from the Men in Black or anything like that, nor have I had any black helicopters hovering about me, as some have been plagued with. None of that has happened to me. But I am very fortunate in that some truly impressive and scary people are watching my back, and I also have some off-planet support that the average UFO researcher will never have. You could say I have guards and then guards.
Okay. So let's go back to the to this recovery of a dinosaur era UFO, and your contact basically got the information to you that yes, it's real. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're looking for NATO, a strong NATO ally that has all the various parameters that would have fit what your contact told you. So let's go from there. What happened?
Okay, I should back up. What we were doing was systematically working through all the various criteria as defined in the SERPO article. Then when my contact came under threat, the amount of information and the work associated with getting it diminished drastically because my contact was, you know, running scared to some degree. So eventually we figured out where it was likely to be. So the part of the book, you know, I don't want to give the whole thing away, obviously, but it's a progressive revelation. It's kind of like a detective story in a way. And by the way, this was originally written as a magazine article, and I will be kind and not tell you for whom, but suffice it to say that the editor-publisher found it too hot to handle. And I was also informed there was some arm twisting going on behind the scenes, but the article was rejected. So it became the basis for the book. But
did the editor describe for you what sort of arm twisting?
No, that was separate communication provided to me privately. But suffice it to say that the article as submitted was fine up to the point I started attaching bodies to it.
What do you mean by that?
Corpses. When I said that MJ-12 was deadly dangerous, I was not kidding. There have been a lot of UFO researchers and other kinds of researchers and family members and relatives and whatnot who have come to very bad ends as a result of getting involved in this. People have been run off the road. People have been driven mad and forcibly put in mental institutions. People's lives have been ruined in every way you can think of. People have died under all sorts of mysterious circumstances. As I said, you know, I've come under direct threat. People I've talked to have come under direct threat. Girlfriends have been forced off the road and had their necks broken simply because they were in their boyfriend's car, which was, you know, the boyfriend was a UFO researcher. I know people who have been put through all kinds of hoops. Linda Bolton Howe has publicly talked about this, where she was being screwed with by Rick Doty of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. She was supposed to be given all kinds of special insider UFO material, and, you know, she got HBO involved in everything, and, you know, they pull the access at the last minute and leave her hanging. Labs have been broken into. Every dirty trick you can think of has been used, and probably some you haven't. This is deadly, deadly serious business, because the impact it had on one of the leading scientists in this country was it broke him down to the point of collapse. He simply couldn't handle it.
You said that you have received direct threats.
I've not received direct threats, but I've been told that, you know, the word was out. the expression in the intelligence community is Lance the Boil. And I got word that at several points that was going around. When are we going to Lance the Boil, referring to me? It is a euphemism for a killing.
Well, what did you do when you heard that?
Well, I was told if it looked like they were really going to move against me, some actions would be taken. And I was told certain things to look for in terms of indicators that something might be about to happen, and went from there. And there was a strong response from the liberation forces, who are the positive extraterrestrials, extra-dimensionals, here to help liberate Earth. And that's another whole discussion, as you might imagine. But that was where the special guards came from, you might say. But there are some very powerful and scary people looking over me, because they want to see what I have to say gets out to the world. They are tired of being lied to. They're tired of the citizenry being lied to. They're tired of more things than we have time to cover on this show. And so people are talking, and they're talking at direct personal risk. If the, you know, if the listeners and the viewers want to see just how bad it can get, go to my site, johnkentler.com, and look at Urgent Warning. That is what one person's direct experience was, and I guarantee you will find it hair-raising and sobering simultaneously.
Okay, now, your dad was a highly respected aerospace engineer, correct?
Yes, he was a...
Ed Hughes.
Yes, and before that, a number of other major defense contractors. He started with Texas Instruments. He worked for Goodyear Aerospace, which is now part of Loral. Let's see, who else did he work for? He worked for LTV Electro Systems, now called E-Systems, in Greenville, South Carolina. Trying to remember all the places. And he had a long and storied career with Hughes. My dad's specialty was making exotic programs work that nobody else could. He was an engineering genius. He would be the guy heading up the engineering and technical side of a program, whereas you don't schedule and that kind of thing. So my dad came in as an electrical engineer at Texas Instruments and brought in the standard, it's called the ASR-4, it became the standard airport surveillance radar, hence the name.
Okay, we have to step away for break, and when we come back, we'll get back to this whole thing about recovering UFOs. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, John Kettler, and what we're talking about is UFO stuff here tonight, and some of the dangers involved in being a true, genuine UFO researcher. John has quite a background, and has been a high-level military analyst at... I'll get the name wrong, but Hughes Aircraft, I think it was called, and missiles. What was it called, John?
Hughes Aircraft Company Missile Systems Group.
There we go. I knew somebody knew it. But I'm an old guy. I forget stuff. So we kind of got off course a little bit, but we're not really. We're talking about things associated with this investigation. of recovery of crashed UFOs. Have we here in the United States, either our military or some intelligence group, somebody, have we actually recovered downed UFOs?
Absolutely. First one was in, I believe, the early 30s. It was recovered by the U.S. Navy when it came crashing down into the water, more or less. I mean, it actually managed to land, but it was trailing smoke, and it came down practically right next to an old, old cruiser. From the descriptions I've gotten, this thing dated probably back maybe the Spanish-American War. I'm uncertain, but...
Okay, you're referring to the Navy ship.
Yes, yes. An old, old, I don't know, maybe coal-powered, cruiser dating back to the Spanish-American War, circa 1898, somewhere around there. And this thing was trailing smoke. They managed to... the hatches, I guess, popped on it as soon as it landed. They were able to... retrieve it. I'm not quite sure how, but this is, as I understand it, how the U.S. got in the saucer retrieval business. The Navy.
This was in the 1930s.
Exactly.
So this is before you had the Nazis building craft that looked very much like what we call UFOs.
Yeah, well, at least based on what I've been able to piece together. Now, the Italians had... See, people think our first crash recovery was Roswell in 47. It wasn't. And the Navy actually runs Area 51. The Navy is the senior service when it comes to matters UFO, which is quite a shock to most people. It certainly was to me, but now you know why. The Italians had their version of Roswell in 1933 at a place called Moderna, Italy, which gave them a seat on the German saucer program and all the German black projects for that matter, as testified by a guy named Romersa in Joseph Farrell's Reich of the Black Sun, and also a documentary that aired on the military channel called Mission for Mussolini. The Italians really got into it heavily and had a big lead on the Germans, whose crash recovery was, I believe, in Bavaria in about 1937. And that's how the Germans got going on it. But the Italians, who many people considered backwards and whatnot, were in fact very, very advanced in terms of their aeronautical engineering, in terms of their ship design, and a number of other things. Their armor was a tragedy, but when it was first designed, they had some really advanced stuff. But, the Italians had an ancestor of the jet engine going with a Caproni aircraft before Whittle got the jet engine going. As a case in point. And one of the German craft, which may or may not be familiar to your viewers, is the Baluzzo Mitha Schriever device. Well, Baluzzo was an Italian aeronautical engineer. And note that he's the first name in that list.
Okay. So we have recovered craft. What do you think was going on back in the 1930s that all these UFOs are crashing?
Well, we can't blame it on radar. I really don't know. The crew of the craft recovered off San Diego was burnt up very badly, so they may have had some sort of onboard fire, which, of course, is the bane of anything that flies, or ships for that matter, too.
Okay.
And the Navy subsequently studied that one very carefully and was able eventually to get it to fly. And as I understand it, I don't remember all the details, but they were out flying it one day circa 1952. Another flying saucer appeared, and next thing you know, theirs had vanished into it, and that was the end of the Navy's flight test program with the one recovered off San Diego.
So the recovered flying saucer and the human crew in the flight test disappeared.
You got it.
Okay, so let's talk about Roswell for a moment. Again, highly controversial, but the reason I know that it was E.T., and the reason I'm sure it was E.T., and the reason I'm sure that it was that they recovered it is because of all the massive lies that have been told to keep it covered. And even in giving us their last story about Project Mogul, they get all the times wrong, and there was no Mogul flight. All Mogul flights are logged. There was no Mogul flight logged for that date. What can you tell us about Roswell?
Well, we should also point out that the official Air Force investigation explanation was that it was crash test dummies, which is also quite droll because the crash test dummies weren't dropped until the early 1950s. So apparently there was also a time machine involved that they neglected to tell us about. And then there have been other claims that, you know, it was actually Japanese POWs that were tortured and medically altered. And, you know, the list just keeps on coming. There have been claims that it was German, which is also a very hot subject. But I have been told by the Liberation Forces that the Roswell craft was actually one of the bad guys that was shot down by one of the good guys. The dead giveaway on this, never mind what Walter Haut said in his so-called deathbed confession, which I wrote about in Atlantis Rising and is in the anthology, Forbidden Science, that's edited by J.D. Kenyon, who's the editor and publisher of that magazine, is that recently, and I don't know the title of the book, but the deputy director of Central Intelligence Agency for Public Affairs somehow, and this may be part of disclosure, I really don't know, but everybody who's ever worked for the agency who decides to write an autobiography is under thorough security review. It took Ben Rich, who was Kelly Johnson's successor at the Skunk Works, at what's now Lockheed Martin, years to get approval on his autobiography. Well, this guy got his approved, and he flat out says in his autobiography that everything the government has told us to date about the Roswell crash is a lie, that in fact there was an ET craft that went down, that there were bodies recovered, and there was a live one recovered.
Yeah, that's been making a big splash here within this last month, within the last 4 to 6 weeks. His statements have really made a big splash.
And they should. It ought to be front page news, but I seem to have missed it, and it hasn't. Yes, I do have a biting sense of humor when it suits me. And I live in this incredibly surreal reality in which, on the one hand,
I hate to do it. We have to step away for break. We'll pick up with a surreal reality right after this. We'll be back, folks. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We are delighted to have you here. And you have my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. And here's hoping that you never suffer that tragedy again. My guest is John Kettler, and we are talking about UFO stuff, lots of UFO stuff, and some pretty heavy UFO stuff. We do have a caller on hold, but John, I want to give you a chance to finish your statement. You said you live in a pretty surrealistic existence.
Exactly, because on the one hand, on certain discussion fora, I am under the most savage and vicious personal attack and called crazy and a whole lot worse by people who absolutely cannot and will not entertain even the possibility that UFOs might be real. And when I cite polls that show that, you know, people have consistently shown a not just a belief in the reality, but also a belief that the government's covering up and it's grown over time, and that it also correlates directly with level of education, they just dismiss that too. That's one side of it. Out of the other side of it, I have directly talked to people who have guarded UFOs. I've talked to people who've been directly involved in anti-gravity research. I've talked to people who've been involved in crash recoveries. I've talked to people who've been involved in UFO project security. I've talked to people who've seen them. I used to work with somebody at Rockwell whose wife's side of the family had a long history of apparent genetic experimentation and whatnot, so bad and consistent that when she had a hysterectomy, her female relatives told her, and now the visits will stop. This poor woman's female organs had been, as far as her gynecologist could tell, mixed mass. They were so jumbled and worked through, and she developed all kinds of problems. But she would do things like leave her children in the middle of the night and go out to a light in the forest. Okay? You know, when you've had that, when you've talked to people who've been involved with these things, that's jarring enough. But now when you talk to what I call the ground contingents of various branches of the liberation forces, these are people who work with them and in some case are incarnates of those groups. And then when you have the ability to talk to people who have a family connection with them and also to have a direct personal telepathic experience of them, which is what I have. I have a long history of psychic gifts. I've had special training in Silva mind control, both at the basic and graduate level, which is essentially a program in applied psychic functioning. I think that helped open me up. I've had other experiences, and I went to hear somebody else's channeling experience, which I didn't attach any particular credence to. And next thing I know, I find myself seeing somebody on the other side and hearing somebody on the other side. And I can't.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a moment, and we'll talk about it. But I want to take this call.
Sure.
And I want to tell our audience that the telephone lines are open. You know the number, 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. It will work from anywhere in the world, but we know it's expensive to make international long-distance calls, so we have an additional option for you, and it is called the Flash Message. Go over to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it, you'll see the link that says Flash Message. So, to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Ryan in Washington State.
Hello, Ryan.
I'm going to ask your guest a really tough question. and I don't mean this to be an attack on your guest. I'm not judging the claims of your guest.
All right.
And if people in the audience are pissed off, well, that's too bad.
Ryan, yes. Do you know about the rules we have for language on this show? You wouldn't have done that if you called George Norrie, would you? 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you wouldn't do it on somebody else's show, don't try it on this one. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? All right. We have a caller not prepared to talk to us. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And we would love to hear from you. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, John.
Hi.
You made a statement just a few moments ago about that, about an alien I assume you met was incarnate in a person. Can you explain that?
What I'm talking about is someone who looks like us, talks like us, and whatnot, but is actually a being from another dimension who is stepped down, if you would, in frequency, vibratory rate, however you wish to characterize it, and is operating in a human body with some very, very real limitations, because a, let's say, sixth-dimensional being doesn't shoehorn very well into a third-dimensional body. It causes all kinds of stress on both ends of the equation. That's an incarnate. It is someone who is a soul who is not this world.
Okay. How, where are the aliens? You mentioned about some the good guys. Where are they? I mean, like, are they in all states or countries? Where are they?
They are off planet. There are also some on planet. I don't know where, and if I did, I wouldn't say. They are there. Generally, they're to be found in higher dimensions, and thus, unless you have some very specialized gifts or some very specialized gear, are effectively invisible to the rest of us. They are here to liberate Earth from the reptoids, which are essentially an evolution-damping race who've been in control of all the key levers of power for a long time. You've seen what happens when the top of their pyramid is removed, with what's happening in banking and finance now, where there's been this cascading series of resignations and retirements and things like that. That is because the top of that pyramid was essentially decapitated by the liberation forces. And replacements have been brought in, but it's having this tremendous cascading effect because the finance sector is set up in a pyramidal structure. That is a classic reptoid structure. The reptoids are reptilian humanoids. That's what the thing stands for. They run in the 9 to 12 feet, 6 to 700 pounds, strength of 6 to 12 men. They reproduce by laying eggs, and they have the ability to mask themselves as to their true appearance with holography, and also the ability to distort perception at the mental level. They have tremendous psionic power, which has to be guarded against when going in against them operationally. This is where you get the notion of the tinfoil hats, as the popular derisive characterization goes. There is actually a rational basis for a tinfoil hat, but it's much more sophisticated than that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Can I ask one more, Kevin?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And you're, with the knowledge that you know, how is all this, you keep mentioning this Liberation Army, how is that tied in with this 2012 thing, or isn't it, in your view?
Well, the popular conception of 2012 as the end of the world and whatnot is a misconception, and I've hammered away at that on my site repeatedly. The Mayans themselves are not happy about it. There's been a recent archaeological discovery where they found out that the Mayans, in fact, continued the calculations. Their calendric cycle is referred to as a baktun, and 2012 is not the end of the world. It's merely the end of one calendric cycle and the beginning of another. So there's that, but the liberation forces are here and are now public to some degree, but most of them have not identified themselves, and there is an actual, no kidding, war on with very real casualties. If humans were involved, the fatalities by now would far exceed that of the Vietnam War, which was 57,000 KIA, that they're directly admitting. In actuality, a lot more when you factor in Agent Orange and a lot of other things that happened. But extraterrestrials, extra-dimensionals are much tougher, and they are able to bring them back from states that you couldn't possibly bring a human back from. It's more like something along the lines of attempting to resurrect from that great classic Dungeons and Dragons. It's more along those lines.
Okay. Rusty, did you have another question?
No, that does it for me. Thanks.
All right. Let me make a statement real quick, and I hope Ryan is listening. I want to apologize. You know something? I overreacted. And I overreacted because of something that happened to me earlier today. Ryan, you didn't deserve that reaction from me, and I apologize. You call back in. I want to hear what you've got to say. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome. I bet you're hoping I don't overreact on you, too.
Oh, you know what? I was so happy to hear your apology. Because I was on needles and pins here.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go into what happened to me earlier today. But it's something that's has overflowed into Showtime and is still affecting my responses, and Ryan did not deserve that.
Well, kudos, Kevin. Mr. Ketter, these liberators, where are they from, location-wise?
That is something I'm not prepared to reveal. The only group that has chosen to reveal its existence is the Silver Legion, and they operate in the higher planes. And if anybody wants to volunteer, I have some very bad news, because you have to be dead in an earthly sense in order to be eligible to join. They operate in the higher dimensions. But the other ones, if they choose to self-identify, that's their business. But as I say, there is a war on. Real casualties are being taken. Tremendous outlays are being made. And the scope and scale of destruction, whole worlds have been destroyed by the Reptoids and the Greys. Some of those here as part of the Liberation Forces have had that experience, where one or more of their planets has been destroyed. Just like Dantooine. And Star Wars was destroyed.
It does seem that the Reptoids are really, and Greys are really malevolent. Your father, has he told you any secrets that you would be able to tell, you know, even as hearsay?
Nothing on this subject at all. This is the kind of thing that would absolutely cause my dad to break his teeth over. he was not really open to this stuff, and that's stating it hyper-conservatively. Now, I said to him once, but you taught me to have an open mind, but he said something along the lines of, yes, but I didn't expect that whole top of your head to fall off.
Yeah, I can understand a parent kind of saying something like that. On the Kevin Smith Show, we talk a lot about pyramids. Pyramids on the moon, pyramids under the sea, pyramids in Alaska. Do you have any reason for the purpose of a pyramid?
Well, I've seen some things where sometimes the top of one is connected to a portal. I've seen things where people say, you know, you shouldn't go to the top of a certain pyramid at, I can't remember if there was Palenque or another site, because people have disappeared from there. They've detected emissions from pyramids in Serbia directly over the top of them. You've got, I believe the guy's name is Christopher Dunn, has done work where he argues that they were generating power in the Great Pyramid. There's a number of different things. They also can be used, as I understand it, and I am no pyramid expert by any remote sense of the word, to stabilize an area, to control certain energies in an area. They have a lot of different applications, most of which are very carefully hidden from us. I have also been told that the pyramids that we see, at least the early ones, are essentially the outworkings of a higher dimensional structure expressing itself in our reality, in third dimension reality. So the actual construct of the thing is a step down, if you would, from a higher dimension. And this is just how it happens to express in our reality. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you for your insight. And, Kevin, thank you for an interesting show once again.
All right. Thank you. I want to, I don't know if Ryan's still listening, but I want to repeat my invitation for Ryan to call back in and repeat my apology. I'm not pleased with it, but it was an overreaction. I should not have reacted that strongly. And again, don't want to make excuses, but I entered the show tonight still dealing with something that happened to me earlier today. And I guess I'm a little bit on edge about it. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, Kevin, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Yeah, Mike.
Before I ask anything, or I mean say anything, I'd like to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, you referred to discovery of crash craft that went back in history to about the time of the dinosaurs or somewhere in that period. So where did they supposedly or allegedly find this craft? What country?
Well, I don't want to give away the punchline, as it were, but it was found as a result of drilling that was being done in support of the installation of a deep underground structure, much like some of the things at Area 51 and other places. And the way I found out how that was done was sheer happenstance. Or you could argue that it was information coming to somebody who was looking for it. Frequently it happens in research that when you're focused on something, information finds you, and that's exactly what happened. I happened to read something over on the Project Camelot site, and somebody was talking about an experience, and all of a sudden, bing! The light bulb goes on, and I said, I think I know what's being talked about here. And I did some checking with my contact, and lo and behold, that's how it happened, that they were doing some drilling in preparation for putting in this deep underground structure, and they kept hitting something that was harder than the drill. So they did more drilling, and then when it became apparent there was something down there, they brought in scientists and, you know, a dig team to see what was down there, and what they found down there cost them their lives, a series of quote-unquote accidents over the next few years. The scientists involved never got to publish what they discovered, and it was the attaching of their bodies, as it were, to the story that resulted in the summary and, oh, I would say emphatic, highly reactive rejection of the story by a magazine editor who shall remain nameless. I'm not going to say which country it was. It's, you know, it's kind of like, why read the book in that case? But it shall we say that the country's fulfilled all the criteria laid out in the original SERPO piece. And it was directly confirmed to me, and the book goes into not just the recovery of the craft, not here, and a lot of other things as well.
All right. Now, there is a movie, a science fiction movie that came out this year. It's called The 25th Reich, and it has to do with Nazi Germany and their development of UFOs. Well, it starts off in 1944, and then it goes 1 year earlier to 1943, and they're in Australia. And they apparently introduced some pumas into the area, but they escaped, so they send out a five-man crew to recover these pumas. And in doing so, they take this machine with them, and the machine turned on. It takes them back 50,000 years. And the reason it turns out to be 50,000 years is one of the American sergeants is really a Nazi. And they're going back to that point, and they find a UFO that's sitting there that they had discovered in 1930s. And their reason for going there was to be able to find that UFO and to get into it and fly it back into the future. And that's why I asked that, because what you said at the beginning went right along with this movie. And this supposedly is how the Germans got their UFO technology, the SS, that is. And, of course, we know that the Thule Society also had experiments going along from the 1920s along those lines. And the Black Sun was basically SS. But then when the troops went chased back to find where this craft went, they wound up in the 25th century. And there were all these German devices, you know, they had conquered the world because of this one ship. And I thought that was kind of interesting when you started off your show that way.
Well, I mean, in this case, a craft was recovered from a dinosaur era formation.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back. Mike, thanks for the call. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this.
Virginia, and you are smart because you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we have a caller online. My guest this evening is John Kettler, and the caller we have online is Ryan. He's a big man. He accepted my apology, and I appreciate it, and we need say no more about it. Ryan, we are delighted to have you back, so please go ahead with your comment or question.
No big deal. You've been doing the show 10 years. You know, you're bound to make mistakes every once in a while. I tell you what, the way I called in, the way I kind of, I now that I think about it, my call was, if I were you, I probably would have done the same thing, but I wouldn't have said what you said afterwards so quickly, so it's no big deal. We're moving on. We're cooking. I just wanted to ask a simple question, and you know, maybe I need to take a deep breath or two. I tell you, Kevin, it sounds like a good idea to me. So my question is, when you were, can you tell us more about your career working for, did you say you worked for Hughes Aircraft? Could you tell us a little bit more about your, where you come from as far as, you said you worked for military intelligence?
No.
Tell us more about that, please. That's all.
Okay, I think I can sort this out pretty quickly. At one point, I thought about applying to the service academies, but I'd been in glasses since second grade, and my eyesight was so bad I wasn't waverable, so that was out. I went into military aerospace after working for a financial printer. I found an outfit that was a spin-off of RAND, which was called R&D Associates. I initially applied there because they were doing some things that I was really interested in, having to do with tactical battle modeling and things of that sort. Back before you had computers that really could do it, but I didn't have a degree then. I hired into Hughes in 1978 without a degree, but with the understanding that I would subsequently get my degree. My dad provided the initial contacts. This was the Operations Analysis Department at Hughes Aircraft Missile Systems Group, Canoga Park, California, out in the San Fernando Valley, if that means anything at all to anybody. Missile Systems Group built all the missiles, the tactical missiles that Hughes put out, the TOW, the Roland, the tank missile, and a whole bunch of other projects along those lines. And my job was to understand the enemy capabilities and project where the enemy was going, look at our deficiencies, look at the enemy deficiencies, make sure we weren't technologically surprised, and basically know everything there was to know that was worth knowing about the then Soviet and Warsaw Pact forces. That was my
question. So were you attached to the government, or were you all private industry?
I worked for private industry. I have never served in the U.S. military.
Okay. That's my question. Anyways, Kevin, you've been doing the show 10 years.
12.
You're bound to make mistakes, and you know what? You didn't really, it wasn't that big a deal. I forgot about it already, so peace be with you. We're good.
All right. Thanks for the call.
And to the audience, peace be with you, too. Thank you for your guest tonight, and I'll just let the next caller come in.
All right, Ryan. Thanks for the call. Yeah, 12 years. I know it's only two, but when you get my age, one more year is a big deal. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and you are welcome to give us a call. I promise. I'm not going to bite you. I don't do that very often, but usually, it doesn't last long. 623-444-5889 to join the conversation. And then if you're outside of the U.S. and you're outside of Canada, you can also join the conversation via our flash message option on the website. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Angel, and I'm calling from New York.
Hello, Angel.
I have a question for John.
Okay.
In regards to the Liberation Forces, does he have any idea when they'll strike or act on behalf of humanity?
They have been for quite some time, and I have chronicled many of the operations on John Kettler Investigates on my site. For example, the raided S-4 and carried off a number of ET craft. They also carried off I'm trying to remember what else they carried off. A TR-3B Astra, which is one of our own gravity-modifying craft. One of the black triangles that's been seen. They range in size from 45 to 60 feet on a side. And are very, very heavily armed, have the ability to screen themselves in a number of clever ways. And so basically one of the most secure areas in the entire country, if not the most, was waltzed into with impunity. And what the Liberation Forces wanted to take, they took. The same thing has happened, I believe, at Wright-Patterson in the complex referred to as the Vault. They have hit Russia, they have hit Japan, I believe, and also Germany. They have stopped war after war in the Persian Gulf. They stopped an attack by Iranian kamikaze boats and some converted civilian craft that were to fire missiles in broad daylight and made 40 vessels disappear. This was seen by U.S. Navy sailors and officers. It was seen by merchant vessels and their crews. It was seen probably by anybody else in the area, and it was recorded on video by, among others, CNN and other networks that had embedded reporters. The tweets about it amounting to hundreds were disappeared when the CIA and Department of Homeland Security waltzed into Twitter headquarters and demanded it, and all the media embeds were threatened with the most, well, not just the embeds, but their networks were threatened with the most dire punishments, including removal of broadcast licenses, threats to persons and dear ones. And that's how a story that should have been a global story was simply disappeared.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yep. Well, that's the reality, and that's how good the cover-up is.
Well, thank you so much, John, and thank you, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call. Is this your first time to call us?
Yes.
It is. Well, let's give you some applause there. Let's see. Where's the applause button?
Right here.
There we go. Okay. Give us a call again real soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Okay, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And then again, the flash messages, if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, we will accept flash messages from you. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Mark from Mojave.
Mark from where?
Mojave.
Okay.
Great show, Kevin.
Thank you.
Excuse my inability to speak. I've had a stroke.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Your guest, is he familiar with Paul Bonner in the Bonner's Works on Antigua Gravity?
Is he familiar with what? Say it again.
Paul Bonner's work with Antigua Gravity.
I'm working with this now, and I had a stroke too, so I'm very understanding about this. You want to know something? Is he familiar with something in the field of anti-gravity?
Paul Potter's anti-gravity work.
I am not. No. No, I am not.
Okay. It was on the Onion Drive.
The Onion Drive. I haven't encountered that either, but then there are lots of things I haven't encountered. There's so much information out there and only a finite amount of time in which to absorb it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you very much, and great show, Kevin.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Wonderful. Yeah, I had a stroke back in 2007, and fortunately, I recovered from it and did so very rapidly, but I can tell you it really messed up my vision for a while. Anybody that's never had vertigo, you can't imagine what it's like. It's pretty tough. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Jerry from Las Vegas.
Hello, Jerry.
I would like to know what is your guest's opinion of what the moon is.
The moon is an artificial satellite, and I have been told by the Liberation Forces that it is a former Reptoid mothership. There was a very interesting demonstration that somebody came up with to explain why the moon is artificial. First of all, there's a long tradition, if you talk to the right indigenous peoples, of a time when there was no moon, which is something that people really ought to pay attention to. But the demonstration is you take a cookie sheet, you put a thin layer of flour in it, and you drop various sized objects on it. No matter how big the object, you can only go so far down, and that's only as the thickness of the layer of flour. The moon's just like that. You'll see huge craters, but they only go down so far, which means there must be an underlying substrate, which is harder than the surface. And also, when, I can't remember which Apollo it was, took off from the moon, they had a seismometer on there that one of my father's teachers in at Spring Hill at Mobile built the seismometer for that, and Admiral Byrd's expedition and a number of other things. But basically, when one of the stages from the Apollo hit the moon, the quote was, it rang like a bell for hours, which means it is hollow.
Well, that doesn't, thank you for the confirmation of my suspicions. I figured it was something like that.
All right, thanks for the call.
It's definitely not natural.
You know, a lot of weird stuff is on the moon. And one of the weird things, just follow the story now about water on the moon. The first people to discover it was not NASA. It was the Indian Space Agency that first discovered that. And then NASA did their little thing where they crashed a rocket into, or a piece of a rocket into a crater to see if it would expel water into the air above or the space above the moon, and it did. And then we've heard, well, there's a lot of water on the moon. And as a matter of fact, when Newt Gingrich was running for president, he gave Greta Van Susteren an interview in which he said, there's a lot of water on the moon, and it's a good place to use as a way station because you can use water for fuel. And it's a good place to have a way station going to other planets. Okay, caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll be back right after this, folks, so don't go away. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. My guest this evening is John Kettler. And, John, we have a caller on hold, so let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia. And the first thing I'd like to say, Kevin, is thank you for having this treasure, this man here on your show. Thank you so much for that. And Mr. Kettler, I tell you what, I wish I wish we had about 12 hours and a bottle of 12-year-old single malt scotch and a couple of glasses to share. I'd like to sit down and just pick your brain for about 12 hours. But since we don't have that, let me just ask you to explore the multidimensional nature that we share and the fact that you've been in contact with multidimensional beings, and let me ask you if you have encountered a higher dimensional version of yourself yet.
Let me see how to begin to approach that. Let me work it backwards, actually. I have found that as a result of the things that I do, that I have come under attack myself, and I have been, I would say, both painfully and painstakingly taught to feel into things and backtrack and whatnot to the source and see what's going on. And I have a higher dimensional component, and unlike the earthly me, which is sort of like the mild-mannered Clark Kent, basically, not any physical threat to anything larger than a cockroach, generally speaking, the other me is a fearsome warrior and goes into battle materializing things like a battle axe or a claymore and pops into a control room and destroys a whole bunch of witches at their consoles. Yes, witches and consoles. Yes, it's bad enough that you have witches, but consoles make it much worse. They can specifically target anyone. I've been attacked by ships and gone after them where I wish issued warnings to cease, and they didn't. And if you ever saw the Star Trek episode Who Mourns for Apollo, where the Enterprise is held in a hand and here's the ship, I've basically gone up and crushed a ship, and when the attacks continued, I went after the entire Navy, including all the bases and training facilities and everything else. I don't know whose it was, but in whatever dimension I was operating, the destruction was utter and complete. I still have trouble getting my head around this, but the person I learned to do this from used to talk about all these ultra bizarre things, and I thought I was out on the bleeding edge, and I frankly thought this person was nuts until I had that telepathic encounter that I mentioned earlier in the show. So my direct perception of some of this is chiefly limited to hearing. Occasionally I'm shown something. Sometimes I can actually see the being. I can pick out details of clothing and things of that nature. I know other people who operate on realms that are so high I even have trouble conceiving of them myself, the fundamental levels on which creation occurs, the core, which is the basis of all of what we think of as reality, creator beings damaged in ways you can't even begin to imagine, having to take people who are in the higher dimensional equivalent of the land of the lotus eaters and kick them in the butts and get them involved in the horrors going on around here and straightening things out. It is incredibly complicated, incredibly mind-blowing, and at times just mind-shattering. Does that answer your question?
Well, it certainly does, and I want to thank you for the hard work that you do and acknowledge that I realize how it removes you from so much of the population out there. I know it's a lonely work that you do once you start exploring these other realities, or rather it is this reality, but in many dimensions. It kind of drives you into a position of isolation, personal isolation, and I want to acknowledge that, and I want to thank you for the work that you do. I'll hang up and give someone else a chance to call in.
All right, thanks for the call, Steve. You, John, told me to remind you, if you forgot, that you had some special offer for the audience?
That is right. We are offering for the next 72 hours a special to the audience/viewership on extreme UFO recovery, or extreme UFO crash recovery, rather. The URL is http://johnkettler, J-O-H-N-K-E-T-T-L-E-R, all run together, everything's lowercase, /July, all lowercase, /.
That'll okay, you almost got it right. It's johnkettler.com. You left out the .com. johnkettler.com/July, all lowercase, johnkettler.com/July/, all of it lowercase. And what is the offer?
The offer is we have a special discount for the viewers, and this is not just an ebook, which is a beautiful PDF with a cover our webmaster Carl designed. He's a graphics genius. But it is also the audiobook read by me, and the EPUB, which can be used on a whole bunch of the Nooks and various tablet devices and whatnot out there. This is not available anywhere else. You won't find it on Amazon. We don't even have the ebook up yet on Amazon. So this is a tremendous value at what we normally sell it for, and I won't say that for the air, but suffice it to say, the viewers get 10% off, and, you know, the deal's good for 72 hours.
Okay. Fantastic. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. You have to make it real quick. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, John. It's Jeff from Tennessee.
Hello, Jeff.
And I just got a couple of questions. One, where do these liberation forces hail from? And how exactly do you contact them?
Okay, John, you've got about 1 minute.
Short answer, a whole bunch of places. I'm not going to say specifically where unless they've identified themselves, and that is not time to go into here. There's a war on, you just don't reveal order of battle information. Sorry. What was the other question?
How do you contact them?
You reach out to them with your mind, with the intent of connecting with them. But actually, I would say go look at the FAQ on my site. There's something on that. There are those who are handling the liaison function, but they are frantically busy dealing with all kinds of crises I can't even begin to go into. But there are ways of doing it, and they're described in the FAQ on my site.
So
okay, fair enough. Good.
All right, thanks for the call. I wish we had more time, folks. We don't have more time. John, I want to thank you for being with us. It's been a fascinating 2 hours.
I know how time has flown.
Time does fly when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, John, if you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring this flight of the KSS Starship in for a landing. And I want to talk with you for just a moment as after we go off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget about that special offer. Be sure you get over there and check it out. johnkettler.com/July/. And it's the special offer is good for the next 72 hours, he says. And we appreciate him for offering that to our audience. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.